on this episode of the Board Games and Beer Podcast.
Vel and I dive into our happenings of the past several weeks, including my impressions and wrap-up of CanCon, along with looking at some good starter games.
We dive into the calendar and see what may be happening in the board gaming world, including upcoming ConTalk.
We take a look at what's in the pipeline, what's ongoing, and what's ending on Kickstarter.
We take a look again at our chat with Eduardo Baraff on his ongoing Kickstarter liftoff.
We look at the beer of the episode. It's going prehistoric with pointy Clovis spheres, and I may toss Vel under the bus in our beer game.
We step back into the vault to the Stone Age, and mammoths are abound.
That and much more on this episode of the Board Games and Beer Podcast.
Welcome. You're listening to the Board Games and Beer Podcast. Welcome back to the Board Game and Beer Podcast, episode 12. I'm your host, Vel, and once again, joining me is my lovely co-host, Morgan. Morgan, how are you?
I am fantastic. It's great to finally get back to this. How have you been?
I'm doing okay. We'll kind of chatter out that a little bit. I'm hopefully doing a little bit better. I'm on the rebound here. I have a little bit of health stuff. Not going to get into too many details, but we'll talk about that a little bit here momentarily. Anyway, well, I'd like to mention that our theme was conducted by the astonishing Andrew Allen, who can be found at Keys with Soul. So, Morgan, what's been happening the last time we spoke with you as far as maybe games go?
Oh, let's see here. Last time we spoke, that I've played recently. I've been doing a lot of different stuff. Most recently, let's see here. What did we play last week? We played actually one of Lauren's kind of pet projects. I don't think, unfortunately, it's ever going to see the light of day for publication, but we played Six Kingdoms last night, which was a ton of fun. I think he talked to you about that in the interview. Six Kingdoms,
yes, he
did. Settlers of Catan on crack.
Okay.
And it's great.
Oh, cool.
And believe it or not, we followed it up with some good old-fashioned Taboo. And girls versus guys, the girls kick their butts.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. What about you? What have you been up to?
Oh, well, you know, I've been, you know, obviously we're kind of getting, hopefully, like you said, some things back to normal. But, you know, I've just been traveling a lot. I mean, I was in New York and Portland and, you know, those trips kind of smashed all together, and so I was like running all over the place. But I'll just go to the Portland trip really quick. That was quite fun. So I brought up several games that some friends of mine up there that they hadn't had a chance to play them. And I'll tell you what was really cool about this, and I'll mention the games we played. And I know there's one of them that's in there that's not your favorite. But what was cool was they liked a couple of these so much. Well, actually all of them, that wound up playing, I think, each of them like about 4 or 5 times each, which I normally don't get to do, and I found that rather refreshing. So we just left it set up and we played it again, and then we're like, oh, that's cool, let's do it again, and we played again. And so I haven't done, honestly, gaming like that in a while, particularly with a lot of stuff that I normally do. You know, we play something and then we put it away and we grab something else. So it's kind of fun to play a bunch of stuff in a row. So I brought up there to introduce them. I brought them Dungeon Roll. So we played that a bunch of times.
Okay.
Played that about 4 or 5 times, I think. And then we played Jeff's going to kill me. Downfall of Pompeii. He was giving me a bunch of crap about that the other night. I did play that the other night. We had some new people come into one of our meetup groups, and I, of course, pulled that out because I think it's a good intro game, and they really thought it was fun. And I remember Jeff making this comment that he goes, I go, well, I have this little strategy, and I told him what it was, and he says, well, you ought to with the amount of times you play that game. You know, so I think that's probably the one I beat to death a little bit at this point, but I still think it's fun. So we played several games of that. I brought up Francis Drake. Unfortunately, never got around to playing that, even though I have it. Kingsburg, and they love that. And Lords of Waterdeep. So that was kind of cool. And then, you know, honestly, didn't really play much after I came back from Portland because I shot right off to New York and then was busy doing some other things. And that was actually probably the funnest trip of the whole summer I had, I think. But kind of got back into some stuff, and I've been going to a couple of little things, and it's just been, you know, some you know, kind of simple games like Bonanza. You know, been played that a little bit, and then trying to think. Yeah, Yesterday, which is a game that I really like. I'm probably going to butcher the name, but Yspahan. Does that sound right? Yspahan. I am not great.
I've never heard of that one.
I am not great on that. They claim it's a 2-4, but it's a 3-4 player game. It's a Persian kind of themed game, ancient Persia or whatever. And so basically what you do, it's a three-phase game with 7 rounds in each. So it's essentially 21 turns. And you have this little map of these little villages, which they call socks, right? And you you roll dice, and they get placed on this board, and the first person that rolls gets to pick which set of dice they want, and then they can place people in that particular area, because it usually corresponds to an area on the board, or they can take a card, or they can play this supervisor guy, which can move around, and he can move pieces out. It kind of messes with other people. So it's really interesting. It all comes down to dice rolls, but it's got some interesting mechanics in there. So basically, what you do is you fill up the buildings are worth. If you fill them up, you get points for it. And at the end of the 7th round, it keeps going around the table. And there's also buildings you can build that can enhance some of these things. And they can give you points as well. Then you score everything and you wipe everything off the board. And then you start all over again. And that's got this other interesting mechanic where it's got this caravan that you can place your units into. Super fun, quick little, neat little game. I love these camely themed games for some reason. It seems like everyone might play. If there's such a word, you know, yeah, I don't know, that they're super fun. It's I really recommend it. It's a cool little, I mean, just keep picking something else up that I, you know, I like. So it's kind of it's an area control, area influence dice rolling game.
Okay.
And it's, you know, that sounds pretty cool. It's Asian themed. It's got animals, which are camels, you know, and that kind of thing. And, they say it's 2-4, but I don't see how you could. It's weird. It's like a 3-4 player game, but it's really best with 4. It works fine with 3, but 4, it gets kind of nutty. And then the only other one that I want to mention, and I played it just today, is a game called Hoyuk, Hoyuk. And it's a kind of ancient city building, prehistoric. It's got this modular board, it's tile placement, and so on. And I thought that was really fun. It was actually a print and play, and I know it's went into, you know, obviously it's went into full production. But this one, why I thought it was so cool, had two really cool mechanics. One of them was the person that has, that's turn it is, can pick and pass the piece to whoever's turn it is, to anybody in the game. So it can conceivably pass the thing back and forth, and then that person never gets control. You don't get railroaded, though, because basically on your turn, you do a build phase. And this is what I thought was also cool, was the build cards were random. So whoever turn was, they just got to pick one of them, and then it passed to the next person, they pick one, and then you flip them over. So you don't know what the hell you're getting to build every turn. I thought that was so cool. And so even if you're not getting the piece to control it, you're not going to get to a point where you can't build anything. It's totally random. And then what happens, you do the building, you do that twice, and then you essentially have 25 tiles. God, I'm jumping all over the place here. And once the 25th tile gets placed, the game's over. And you can score points because you've got little structures you can build in the buildings when you get the building cards, right? And you can get these cards, and then it comes down to like, well, if you have more, there's ovens, I think it's like corrals and shrines. And so then it turns into these little city blocks, because you want to build next to people because you can't be alone and get these cards. And so you get the cards and you can turn them in for more building pieces, or you can turn in sets of them and score points. But the other interesting thing that happens before you get these cards, which is this thing that was also cool, was this catastrophe gets pulled out. So you can get all the stuff set up on the board and then totally get screwed. I mean, but it doesn't just mess with you. It messes with everybody. And there are things like, you know, pick the spot that has the most buildings in it. This fire burns through it, wipes out half of your buildings. And then you go back and rebuild. It was really cool. But I love the passing of the building things was totally random. You didn't know what you were doing. And I also like that you got to pass the game piece, and that catastrophe thing made it really, really interesting.
What is it with games with disasters in you, huh?
I don't know.
It's camels and disasters.
Yep, and basically it was really funny because I wound up drawing two really nasty ones on my turn and just wiped everybody out. And I was like, because we had this game of Ancient Civ one time we played, and so I've kind of gotten this name that I'm Calamity Jane. And Jeff knows that. And I said, well, you know, this is not good that you see we're playing this. And then, you know, you see that when it comes down to me, they're like, I could just see Jeff going, can we just skip his turn? Because we don't want to get screwed. So
you're the person that always draws the outbreak cards in Pandemic, huh?
I would imagine. Well, yeah, I played it a couple of times. Yeah, it seems like, well, it kind of, you know, it certainly gets to me. I don't know. I don't know if I recall I've been the one doing that. In that game very much. I don't think it's ever been on my turn much, the few times I played it where I've had to do that with people. So, but anyway, I mean, I'm a little winded there, but that's a couple things I've been playing. So, well, maybe we can toss those two out there that we mentioned. Those are a couple of really cool games. They were made in 2006, but super fun, pretty easy to teach them, and, you know, not that bad of a thing. So, Morgan, so what we're going to do, everybody's aware, we've talked about this on previous shows. We're going to start kind of building into a new segment here. Morgan and I are going to mention a starter game that we think is good, and then we'll start doing some stuff with this. So we'll mention it and maybe just briefly talk about it, and then we'll start building a big list for everybody and start throwing this up on the webpage and everything, so we can kind of, because I don't see a lot of this kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. Morgan, why don't you go first, and we're gonna do one game each because this could get really winded. But why don't you go ahead and say what would be a good starter game? Now, remember what we were saying here. These were games that you don't really necessarily have to have in your collection, but would be good to have, right, to teach somebody that comes into a gaming group or they have never played anything like this or whatever. So go ahead.
All right. My starter game would be Splendor. It's a little hard to find right now. The second production run is just kind of hitting stores. Mm-hmm. I was able to pick up my copy last month. Mm-hmm. But Splendor is a really awesome kind of, it's a little bit tableau building, it's a lot set collection, mm-hmm. It's very easy to understand. The excellent thing about the game is that it's absolutely zero reading required, of course, outside of the rule book.
Right.
So it's very approachable. I would be comfortable teaching this to kids probably down to 8 years old or so, and it's easy enough to grasp where I could take this to someone who's never played a board game in their life, and I think they would have fun with it.
Right.
It's beautifully designed from kind of an upper level standpoint. I think a lot of game designers could learn a lot from looking at Splendor, from looking at how simple it is and how everything works together. Mm-hmm. And the components are, of course, super high quality.
Right, right. I agree with you. I like that one, too. It's really easy to pick it up, and people get their head around it and everything. And interesting enough, like I said, Jeff and our board game group comes up with some awesome ideas. When we play with him, what he's actually done, I don't know where he found them, but he found these, like, instead of using the gem cards, because basically that's what it is, too. You're like, one of the big premises of the games is collecting these gems. What is it? Rubies? Mm-hmm. Diamonds? Sapphires? Yeah. And
I'm not sure if the black one's supposed to be like obsidian or like a dark topaz or something.
Yeah, it's something like that. So you're basically kind of collecting these gems, and then you use the gems to buy cards, and this card score you points, right? But instead of using the gem cards that come in the regular game, he went out and found like little plastic pieces, and they look like little gems. So he's got like little white ones for the diamonds and blue ones and red ones and green ones. And he's even got black ones. I don't know where he found them.
See, the set we've got has some really super weighty poker chips in it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, these things are amazing. They've actually got a little bit of like a holographic effect to the image.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And I've been super impressed. They're a lot of fun to sit and play with, too, at the table.
Mm-hmm. Right, so. Right. Yeah, keeps the people occupied while they're waiting for their mm-hmm. turn. Yeah, the
awesome
game's always
thing
good
about
when they
Splendor
do that.
Too. Yeah, the other awesome thing though for Splendor for me is it plays in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. You can play two people in 30 minutes. You can play four people in 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's very quick.
Yep.
Very easy to grasp. Takes maybe one turn, two turns to learn tops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I gotta agree with that. That's an awesome one. So if you want a good.
So what's yours?
Well, this is funny. I actually just played this just recently, but I thought this was a really good intro. Mine's going to be Kingdom Builder.
Which okay, I'm that's sure... Vaccarino, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And it's you know, it might look a little intimidating to people, but what's, you know, have you played it before, Morgan? I don't know if you've tried that.
Yeah, actually, I was just introduced to it 2 or 3 months ago, actually. Mm-hmm. Michael introduced me to it at Tabletop,
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm. Well, before I go explaining, what's your thoughts on that one?
I really like it. I actually liked it enough where I downloaded the app. I don't own the actual box version of the game, okay. But there is an app, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually a big fan of it.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the goal cards that you get...
Mm-hmm. Right.
The game can be kind of varying amounts of fun for me. Like, right. I think some of the goal cards kind of make it a little less fun, but...
Right, sure. That's totally, mm-hmm. totally interesting. So, yeah.
But, no, I love it. It's so... It's always different every time mm-hmm. you play it, so... Yep.
And, you know, and like I said, it's very simple. So, basically, as the game says, it's Kingdom Builder. You randomly play with 4 different maps. Each player gets a set of houses that they build onto the board with. In their turn, they get to place them. And when the first person that runs out of the pieces, and then you they have a bunch of little scoring mechanics they do, but it's very easy to explain. So you have these cards that you draw every turn, and there's obviously different geographical areas on the board, right? Where if you draw that card, then that's where you got to place your houses. And then if you draw that card again, you have to build next to the houses that you already have. And they've got other things in there where they have those specialty buildings that, you know, let you do extra things if you build next to the cities. And they have some other stuff in there that you have to kind of be aware of. And then obviously when the deck runs out, you know, you keep going through it. But it kind of rolls around the table. And like you were saying, the other neat mechanic with it is that the goals for every game are different because you draw out 3 of them out of this deck of what I guess are like objective cards or something. And it just says, you know, well, if you got, I'm just giving an example. When one of the times I played it, it was like for every house you had going across the board in a horizontal line.
What is that, knights? I think it is.
Yeah, or something.
Because that's the one that always comes out for us.
Right, and then you get points mm-hmm. for that. So what's like you said, what really makes the game interesting that I like is with those objective cards really drive what you want to do. So I think we had another one where it was like every house you built next to water, and we had a ton of water in that. So, you know, if you could get your guys, but it still runs down to, do you draw the right card? Because there's like what you have like different terrain. You have like a desert, you have a forest, you have a field. What is there? Mountains and like a chasm or something like that. You can't build in the mountains. I know you can't draw that, but awesome little starter game, I think, you know, for people if they haven't got tons of replayability to it. I think, like I said, it may look like it's intimidating to people, but I think it's one of those ones when it's so easy to teach that people can get their head around it really easily. But even after that, that game really changes a lot, though. I mean, it's got a lot. It's very simple to explain, to grasp the concepts, and the gameplay is very simple. But the strategies and stuff in it really make it interesting. I mean, it's really pretty dynamic game, I think.
And one thing I'll say from my experience playing it is I've never played it, and I've probably got 5 or 6 games of it in at this point in time. I've never played it where there's been more than about a 10 to 15 point differential between first place and last place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It winds up being really, really tight, and, you know, that mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah, it's something where you're never really out of it because mm-hmm. there's always objectives you can go for.
Right, exactly. You got different things you can shoot for. So those are our two.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It definitely lets a new player feel competitive at it, too.
Exactly.
Because I think I won my first game, and I was like, wait, what?
Right.
Because it was an entire different like gear shift from what we had been playing that night. So
mm-hmm. Right. So anyway, so we're going to go with those two, and then we'll keep building on our list. So Kingdom Builder and Splendor, if you're... need something that's good to get people going, or you don't, you know, like you're trying to bring somebody into your group, and you don't know. Well, those are two that we're gonna recommend, and we'll keep throwing more of those out to you. So why don't we? So you got any shout outs for this week or anything? I'm gonna save some of mine actually.
Say, I don't particularly have anything.
Okay, I'm going to save some of mine for a little bit later in the show. So why don't we go roll on to the calendar then? Okay, so welcome to On the Calendar. This is what meetups are coming up and what we may be playing or doing. So we'll do a quick rundown of our last meetups and what is coming up on the Reno Area Tabletop. And remember, that got changed. So the first one we got coming up is the Star Trek Attack Wing, which is a new one, on August 12th.
And then Comet Kingdom Open Gaming, Wednesday night, August 13th.
And then we've got Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures game on August 15th. Cool, I finally get to get back into that.
Hey! Comet Kingdom Open Gaming on Saturday, August 16th.
Yeah, and then we've got our Board Game Blitz on August 17th. And Roundtable. Sorry, I put that in there. Sorry, Morgan.
It's okay.
And Roundtable Top Games on August 21st. Yeah, go ahead.
Traditional Game Night plus beer, August 25th.
And then we've got another Learn a New Board Game on September 14th. And
hey, is anything going on with Arkham Horror in Reno?
Nope, but I'm going to kind of throw a little thing out there, and then I'm going to kind of throw a shout out here. I'm not sure how that's going to kind of progress for us. I'm sure maybe we'll have some things going on, but I just wanted to kind of throw a shout out to Phil, who did co-host with us a couple of times early on. He's having to move on, and he's moving out of the area, unfortunately, at the end of the month. We're really, really sorry to see him go. He's been a great member of our group. He's very, very fun to play with. I'm going to have to throw some things out here because he'll get a kick out of this. And I know we're kind of a family-friendly show, but Phil, you need to get some wood, and you need to get some balls. That's all I'm going to say. He'll get a kick out of that. Oh, and they're also, he's got to get sheep. He's got to get sheep, wooden balls. Sheep, wooden balls.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm going to end on that. So Morgan, what cons do we have coming up? Anyway, we haven't had a chance to talk with your Kent con. So why don't you tell us kind of what happened with that?
Okay. Well, first off, I do have two upcoming cons for the Kansas City area. These are a little ways out. This is a little bit over the hood since I know everybody's kind of on their way to Gen Con next week and everything else. Mm-hmm. But I haven't made aware of two, and Kansas City area is probably a loose term for this one. I will actually be at TsunamiCon, which is in Wichita, the first weekend in November. Mm-hmm. And then the weekend right before Thanksgiving, which I believe is like the 20th through the 23rd, Kansas City Game Fair is going on at the Airport Hilton again.
Okay.
So I should be at both of those.
Cool. Well, good for you.
November's going to be a busy month.
Nice. Well, it's good. Something to look forward to, though, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, so what's your, so what happened? Let's get a little synopsis about what happened at CantCon.
All right. CantCon. Wow. My CantCon started Thursday night at my usual haunt at Tabletop Game and Hobby. Lauren actually brought me in for a playtest of a game from some guys out of town. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's a shout out. Civilized Animal Productions. They are working on their debut game. You're going to hear a lot from these guys in the future.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
I'm super excited. I'm still being asked to kind of keep my jaws clamped shut around all of the details.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't get to say much, but let's put it this way. I played that prototype probably 10 times in 4 days.
Oh, wow. Well,
it's so much fun, and I will tell you, it is right up your alley.
Okay. Well, you just, I was just about to comment, though. I was about to be a little sarcastic and go, well, 10 times, you didn't like that at all, did you?
No, absolutely not. It was terrible. No, it was amazing.
Oh, cool.
So I basically spent all of Thursday night doing that. Friday, I worked during the day. I've got, of course, the new job that's still going awesome, but I showed up right on the tail end of a game of Seven Wonders.
Mm-hmm.
So we broke out Fantasy Frontier, which of course came in from the Kickstarter campaign, got a game of that going.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also got to play Chaos and Alchemy. I got to play the print and play version of that, which is a Kickstarter that should be delivering soon, TM.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Okay.
Yep. Saturday we demoed Transylvania Curses and Traitors just a little bit. Didn't spend the whole weekend doing it or anything, but we got it to the table.
Oh, cool.
And I I got to play Coup.
Oh, sweet. Yeah, I like that game.
Which I won.
Nice. Because you never lie.
Exactly. See?
That's probably a pretty good strategy in that game.
Oh, it's an amazing strategy. You should try it. Like, if you know you're going to play with a group, like, 5 or 6 or 7 times.
Right.
Seriously, just try not lying. Mm-hmm. Like, even if it means you lose the round, just try going straight through and not lying. It's hilarious when they can't catch you on anything.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. I never really thought about that. Actually, just being dead up honest actually might really be advantageous, depending on who you're playing with, right? So.
Oh, it's so funny. Because, of course, I had new players, and Lauren warned them before I opened the box. Mm-hmm. She doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I won because someone called BS on me.
Yeah, well, that'll teach them to listen, I guess.
Yep. That afternoon, gosh, we did Cyclades.
Okay.
With, I believe, the 80s expansion, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, that's got a brand new expansion coming out. They're actually bringing out a Titan expansion.
Yeah, I still haven't tried that yet, but that looks cool. Another one on my list of the multitudes of things I still need to get my hands in or get my nose in or something.
And then I got to do Valley of the Kings, which is a new little deck builder from Alderaac.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I was looking at that. Yeah, that's cool.
It's very, very interesting. I'll talk about it in a future podcast because it'll probably be a starter game for me.
Mm-hmm.
But for a deck builder, it definitely kind of makes you think a little differently because you have to actually not only buy the cards, but then take a second step to score them.
Okay.
So.
I gotcha. Cool. Mm-hmm. So sounds like you had a good time on it. I got to get you here because I don't. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
No, it's just so many games that weekend and I was just flat out all weekend.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
A lot of fun.
So folks, this is kind of a titanic moment here that I have to throw this out. So,
what are you doing to me?
I'm not. Well, I've got to get even once in a while here. So just.
Oh, what are you doing?
Just roll with me here on this. So
uh-oh.
Morgan gets me all the time with all this stuff. So I rarely ever get hers. So I have to do this because I thought this was quite funny. And I was jumping up and down. So I get this tweet from her at CantCon all caps. It says, "This is your fault, ... mostly." And she's got a picture of a TAC wing in one of the ships. It looks like it's up at a register and she's buying it. So I'm just like, finally I get her to buy something. So I spent her money for once, but I was just like, yes, you know how much I talked about that. All the times she does this to me, you know, I was just finally like, well, you know, it's a fun little game. So I guess I could just briefly throw that at you. So you did get a chance to play that a little bit. So
yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. Do you like that? Or
I do.
Yeah,
I'm really.
I would assume so if you bought it.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. if I forced you into buying it. So.
Oh, I've got to tell you, they flat out did the Death Star Trench Run.
Oh, wow.
They had
cool.
Giant board set up,
awesome.
And they had written out a scenario for the Death Star Trench Run.
Oh, cool. Oh, that bitch, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Love to do that. Yeah, I've heard about that stuff. We talk about it in our group sometimes, too. The Mike that runs ours has mentioned that before, but to get a chance to do that. Oh, God, I hope he listens to this podcast because he'll be kind of fired up about that, I would think. Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, just one other thing I'll throw in there before we maybe roll into the pipeline. But that was the other game I brought up with my friends, too. I did get a chance to play Transylvania with them as well. So they really liked that, too.
Oh, awesome.
So I think, you know, the funny thing, I've been playing that game a bunch. I've never won at it. I actually won at that for the first time.
No.
I was up there. So, and I, it was really funny because there's only three of us playing. And this one guy's son, you know, he had everything going for him. Pretty much early on, because he like transformed into a monster like right off the bat. And I said, "Well," to my friend, I said, "we're kind of screwed. We're not going to be able to beat him." And he just couldn't get to some of us. And I built up. I wasn't able to get enough stuff. I think I wound up winning it with knowledge cards or something because I'd actually built up some stuff and I could go fight him. So I was going to do that. But then I grabbed another knowledge card and I was like, "Ooh, I had this card. I could have won the turn before if I'd have read it right."
Mm.
And then I just ran over and I was standing right by the church tile and just popped on there and went, boop, game's over. You know, and I thought we were toast, you know, so, but anyway.
Oh, I've got to tell you, we had a game of Transylvania, and we were playtesting a couple of things that I can't talk about yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it turned out that there were two monsters on the board,
mm-hmm.
and at that point, we were the only things living, and it was me and Jamie.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing the zombie, and Jamie attacked me, and she kicked my butt. I was down to 1 health.
Mm-hmm.
So my next turn, I dropped 2 zombie minions.
Oh, wow.
Ran them at her, and 100 to 0 turn, 1 turn to win the game.
Oh, that's cool.
Like, if I had lost 1 health on a roll, I was dead.
Right, right.
And she would win.
Right.
But, yeah.
Right.
It was
bad. Oh, it's epic. Yeah, it's always epic when it's like that. I love when that stuff.
Well, especially when it's monster on monster.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because actually in a 3-player game, that's the only time you could really conceivably have the monsters all fighting each other, really. You know, kind of the way the game mechanics work. So, yeah, that's kind of cool. I was kind of hoping that was going to happen, but, you know, it didn't. But, no, it was fun. I mean, regardless, you know, I had a good time doing that. So I just had to throw that in there. Got a little off topic there a little bit. But it's all good. It's all games.
It's all games.
It's all games. So anything else you want to throw in there? I know we got Gen Con coming up, so I'm sure we'll do some little talking about that here on our next podcast a bit. But I'm not going to be able to make it to that, unfortunately. But that's the way it goes.
Nope, I'll be there next year, hopefully, maybe. Yeah. But this year is just not in the cards.
Yeah, it's just not at a good time of the year for me, unfortunately, the way that my work schedule's kind of turned out now. That's just not going to be very conducive for me to do that, I don't think, unless something changes. Okay, so what do you say we head into the pipeline?
Awesome.
Okay, welcome to In the Pipeline. This is what new games are coming out and what may look good or not good for that matter. Okay, so Morgan, so we've got a little bit of a slow bit, it looks like here, but I would assume that's gonna happen. I don't know if we got any shout outs that you wanna mention, but
TsunamiCon did fund on Kickstarter this last week.
Oh, okay. Okay. Cool.
And definite huge congratulations to those guys. Let's see here. What else? Do I have anything else for a shout out? I really don't think I do.
Okay. And so what do we got, what do we got that's kind of started or whatever recently, I guess?
So, Asking for Trouble's relaunched. Mm-hmm. They're doing much, much better this time. There's a kind of a redesign of the board. Mm-hmm. It's really mostly just aesthetic that they've changed.
Right. So they took all the orange out of there or?
No, they left the orange. They, took the white out, actually.
Oh, wow.
It's
okay.
On kind of a navy blue black background now. It's really attractive if you haven't looked at it. I guess I should try and spend your money here, shouldn't I?
Yeah, that's probably true. See? Mm-hmm. See, I knew that wasn't going to last very long.
Nope. Lasted all of what, you know, half of an episode?
Yeah, exactly. Not even that. Mm-hmm. Just within like 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Liftoff, of course, Eduardo's game launched on Kickstarter.
Right.
Yep, I'm in on
that
one.
That looks cool.
Yay!
I'm so excited about that making it.
Oh, me too. And he's such a great guy. He's been awesome for his backers.
Oh, yeah, he has been. Oh, yeah, the little video he made about thanking everybody and everything. I thought that was so cool.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really, really nice touch. So
I will give a shout out to Fidelitas. Mm-hmm. That's actually new too. I missed that on my first go through here. And that is a game. It's a card game for 2 to 4 players of Medieval Meddling.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Cool. Sounds awesome.
Yeah. And then finally, of course, I have the pack of games.
Okay. Which, yep. I've seen that.
Have you seen these?
Yes, I have.
You need to get in on these.
Yeah. You know, and I know one of the guys in my board game group that said he was getting out of this stuff, Jeff, our leader, said, oh, I'm getting out of, he's in on that. And I have looked at it. So what, just maybe real briefly, so how much time do we, so if you said Asking for Troubles, how much time is sitting on that one? Just kind of maybe if you can.
Let me pull up here, because I've got to pull it all up onto one screen. Right. I'm a terrible person, didn't have this memorized. Troubles has 22 days.
Okay, and maybe the other two, Liftoff.
Liftoff has 17.
Okay.
Fidelitas has 22 days, and Pack of Games has 20.
Okay. Cool. So they're all about at the beginning, middle-ish point. So people want to get in on those. There's still plenty of time to poke.
Yeah, they're all going to hurt my wallet at the same time.
Yep. That's usually the way this stuff works anyway. And it doesn't look like we got really anything of note that we really want to mention that's ending, is there?
No, everything that I had that was ending did it this week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything in between, you know, 18, 19 days out and 2 days ago. So
sweet. Sweet. So, you know, I guess the last thing I can kind of a short in the pipeline for this episode, but a couple of things I think that are kind of pertinent that I'll mention really quickly is I actually got my first Kickstarter thing.
What'd you get?
it was a game mat to play X-Wing and a TIE-Wing on.
I saw those.
Yeah, they were really cool. So what they did, they took actual, like, photos of space and galaxies and stuff. So I took this galaxy one that was really cool, I thought. We got in, depending on what funding levels you could take, you could have got two of the mats or three or four or whatever. I just went for one because I don't really have one, and I thought this one looked really cool. I liked the photos they had, so I got that. So that funded, you know, really quickly, and these guys got that thing in our hands really fast. So I got mine, like, I'm saying it's almost been about 2 weeks ago now that I've almost got that, I think. At least a week and a half, 2 weeks, I've already got that. And then the other one that I know is on the way too is Evolve from Andrew Rader. I know he just put a post out on his Kickstarter a couple of days ago, said they were starting to ship the game. So I got two of them coming at me. So I'm stoked about that. That's coming at a good time for me too as well. So anyway, so why don't we wrap up in the pipeline here and we'll move into our next thing. Okay, so welcome back. We are going to throw our interview again in here with Eduardo Barraff on his game Liftoff, and we will be back once that is over. This is a special interview tonight with Eduardo Barraff, and we are going to talk to him about his game Liftoff, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. And also, hi. I got Morgan joining me, so how are both of you guys?
I'm good. I'm awake, I promise.
Yeah, and how are you
doing? I'm doing well.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm doing well. A little tired also, but overall doing fine.
Yep, sounds like we all are, kind of. I mean, we've all had kind of some interesting weekends, it sounds like. Anyway, once again, welcome to the show.
All right, Eduardo. First of all, I'd like to welcome you to the show myself, and I just would like you to tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself, your background, and about Liftoff itself.
Sure. Well, so my background is games. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be making video games rather than board and card games my entire career, from essentially starting a game development group in college to moving up from QA to design to production to running studios, and really have, you know, had a great time in, you know, video game development. I started really from that, branching into playing just tons of board games and card games, and, you know, I just love playing games with people of all sorts, and from that started, you know, designing card and board games, and that brought me to Liftoff.
Mm-hmm. So you, like you said, you mentioned video games, so I'm just kind of curious, what's the, why kind of the shift to the board game, you know, maybe away from the video games? I mean, is it a little more of a challenge there, or is it a little more interesting, or what was the logic there?
I mean, I think it's a good question. I guess in my heart, I just love making things, and, mm-hmm. and I love games, and I think that, you know, it's a different type of experience, it's a different type of design and development, mm-hmm. and, you know, one of the fortunate things I've been able to do is work with people who I've met through making video games, mm-hmm. and then actually, you know, work with them to make these card and board games. So, like Murder mm-hmm. of Crows, Thomas Denmark was the art director at Mind Control Software when we were working together when we mm-hmm. started that. And mm-hmm. for Liftoff, I met hired Nicole Kelly at Blue Fang Games, mm-hmm. And then, you know, after we both left there, we started working on Liftoff. So, you know, I mean, I think it's a natural tendency to play games of all sorts if you're into mm-hmm. that thing, but mm-hmm. Type of thing. But it is very different. I mean, it's a different dynamic. I mean, you don't need engineers to make board games. Mm-hmm. That's spectacular mm-hmm. in and of itself. No offense to engineers, of course, but it's a very different experience mm-hmm. than going through and making a console game or a mobile game or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Oh, that makes sense. I totally follow that. Well, it's basically, you know, game mechanics are somewhat similar. So, you know, games are games, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I like both, but, you know.
They're all great. Yep. Fun entertainment.
Exactly. Eduardo, what was the inspiration behind Liftoff, and how did that come to be?
Well, so the inspiration behind Liftoff, I think at the time I was playing, you know, I mean, obviously like Ticket to Ride and Catan, but mm-hmm. I just started playing Forbidden Island.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things for me, at least, is, you know, I've played, you know, the gigantic $100 games and the World of Warcraft board game, or, you know, mm-hmm. On Haunted Hill, or, you know, any of these really deep, long, extended experiences. And, mm-hmm. you know, over time, I like more lightweight, fast, fun experiences mm-hmm. where you sort of can play it once and be competitive the first time. Like the first time you play Ticket to Ride, or the first time you play a lot of Euro style games that aren't like Colosseum. You know, you can sort of play it and feel like you're engaged in the experience, where mm-hmm. a game where you have to like learn the rules the first time and then play it again,
mm-hmm.
To me isn't as satisfying, because I play games with lots of people. You know, there's so many games out there, you can't just play one game over and over again, or I don't like to. I like playing mm-hmm. new games.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a big deal when I can play it for the first time and feel like I played it. So sort of on the back of that, I was like, well, you know, I want to make a game. I like cooperative, but I like competitive. And wouldn't it be neat if you could sort of have something that felt like a little like Ticket to Ride and a little like Forbidden Island? I mean, those are some key games I was playing at the time, but mm-hmm. sort of lightweight experience, but also where we were working together, but then starting to work against each other. And that sort of led me to this idea of, well, you know, I don't know, maybe I was also watching Survivor at the time. I don't know. But it led me to this, you know, confluence of all this stuff. But it led me to this idea of like, you know, when on these shows, you have all these people working together to get off an island. Actually, mm-hmm. originally, it wasn't a planet. It was just like a deserted island. And it was like everyone's on an island. And initially, they're working to get, or maybe I was watching Lost, man. I don't know. But it was like, how do you get off the island? And then at some point, you know, maybe you don't have enough fuel, or maybe you don't have enough food, or there isn't enough room on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything shifts and everything changes. And I wanted to play with that. And that's sort mm-hmm. of how I started in on it.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha. Yeah, it just seems to me a lot of the game design now seems to be kind of going in the direction that you just mentioned, where it was like, you know, a little quicker to play. You know, people can grasp the rules really quickly and get right in and start playing. It just seems to be a lot of the game design now is really kind of going that way, and I like that.
And I think that actually mirrors casual games and mobile games, where as the board game is, I mean, I don't know if it's a heyday or just, but board games are, you know, exploding right now, and mm-hmm. The audience is growing. And you mm-hmm. saw this in the video game industry. As the audience moves away from core, you know, 16 to 22 to 24 year old males, right? And it sort of branches out
right,
into
right, right.
families and broader audiences and a larger percentage of female gamers. And just as it grows out of that core hardcore fantasy audience, you know, you find you reach people who don't have as much time to invest. They don't, they want to play something quick and enjoy it. And I think, you know, this is now even moving into this micro game movement that's happening now, with things that people don't want to carry around a box for a board game. They want to have it in a bag in their pocket, like, and enjoy it that way. So, you know, I think that trend ties into this expanding audience mm-hmm. situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, I think it's good too to try to get people, you know, kind of involved in it or whatever. I mean, we, you know, Morgan and I have kind of discussed about, and even in a board game group that I'm a part of, you know, trying to put a list of games together to kind of intro people kind of into the hobby.
Sure.
That doesn't really scare them away, because, I mean, what we find, we get a lot of people come to our meetup group and they'll say, well, what do you guys play, like Monopoly? I mean, I'm sure you've heard that a lot. And it's like, we kind of go, no, it's not really like that. But, you know, if they, you know, they're genuinely there and they want to learn how to play, I think the worst thing we can do is try to scare them away. So I don't know. It's something I think, you know, Morgan and I have been kind of discussing mm-hmm. about, you know, developing a list of like these, you know, not must play games, but good intro games for people that really aren't accustomed to playing these kinds of things.
Yeah, I think that's a huge thing. And again, I'm often in that situation. And, mm-hmm. and I actually find that the thing that works, which I tried to drive in, you know, develop in Liftoff, but I think happens in a lot of great games where you can also sort of connect and pull into the narrative. Mm-hmm. I think games are games that people enjoy. Like Takenoko is a little bit more complicated,
mm-hmm.
but it's so cute and engaging that mm-hmm. I find that's one that really draws people in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I think so. I think having that list and having those games on hand is great. I mean, even now, I was playing. We were at a big game event, and somebody wanted to play like Fortune and Glory, and it was, mm-hmm. you know, this gigantic box and mm-hmm. 6-player game. And you know, I mean, I'm sure it's actually a fine game with lots of sophisticated components, but in the day, in the experience, it dragged things out so much that mm-hmm. like, I know people were just like, I'm done playing board games after this game. Like it just sort of, you know, it just sort of was like mm-hmm. the last thing mm-hmm. everyone did.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, games that invigorate and, you know, people want to play again or play something else, I think is always mm-hmm. a huge value.
Exactly.
Definitely. So you've mentioned, you know, a lot of games by name. You've mentioned Ticket to Ride. You've mentioned Forbidden Island. Are there any, like, designers specifically or games specifically that have really kind of influenced you as a gamer and you as a designer, not necessarily just specifically on Liftoff, but just as a person?
That's a really good question. Miyamoto? The first name in board games that I sort of really learned was Canintia, and I was just so blown away by his use of math and being able to so perfectly balance and handle all these different games. We were playing Lord of the Rings, The Confrontations. I might have gotten that wrong, but absolutely, like, I loved Stratego as a kid, and that game's mm-hmm. just better.
Mm-hmm.
And also Small World in the same way. It was like, oh, this is like Risk, but just better.
Mm-hmm.
They've just made this game much better. But no, he was the first guy. I was like, this guy, and I would be like, I'm going to play some more of this guy's games. I mean, I want to see what else he's done. And then you find out it's like, no, he's got like 100 games, and you can't do. Another person that's had a huge impact on me and my career is Susan Ross, who makes Quirkle, and in particular because I've met and know her. She has I was introduced to her by Thomas, and she has some game night in Petaluma, and you know, just having somebody who was making games and engaging it and could talk about it and answer questions, that was really it. From a just sort of, oh, you can do this. You can't make any money doing it, but you can do it. that was a really important thing. But on the game side, you know, I like to play a range of games at any given time. I can get excited. I mean, you know, for me, like, an icebreaker game was obviously Catan.
Mm-hmm.
But that's sort of, you know, that's a traditional one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like games that make me think and play in different ways. Like, I had the opportunity to play Space Cadet Dice Duel an 8-player, 4-versus-4 sides, and it was the first time I've played it. And I guess I didn't realize there was a frantic dice category. Like, I've missed that trend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just blown away. I was like, this was as if I was on the ship frantically trying to deal with a situation, and we had captains telling people to. I'd never really played a game that way, and so for me, and it's true in video games too. It really, that's what inspires me when I play something. I'm like, oh, they've just turned it over, or when they execute it so well, where you're like, oh, like Takenoko, it's like, it's not that different, but boy, they really nailed it. That fiction, and it just feels so. You just like want to have it and play with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're talking about the dice ones. See, I've heard some really interesting things about that, too. I mean, we had a con here a couple of weeks ago, and Alan Ernstein was there, who's designed, like, Incan Empire and Dry Gulch Junction and a few other things, and he was ranting and raving about that dice game, about how fun it was, the Space Cadet one.
Yeah, you know, again, it's just one of those things where you're like, wow, I would totally do that again. I mean, it's intense, right? I mean, I could see lots of people who become, you know, like Hex, you're like, I know a lot of people who won't play that game. They're just like, it's like, this is too intense for me. Mm-hmm. But you know, I just found it fun and interesting. And, you know, in other games, to me, influence on Murder of Crows was, to some extent, obviously it has some Uno influence, but moreover, we were playing Guillotine, and that was the first time I'm like, oh, I think that was the first little card game where I'm like, oh, this is like, it's like a deck of cards, but they've just done something totally different with it, and they have, you know, and this is a fun little game. And so I try to draw from everything I play and try to make as much time to play as possible. Like, in the video game space, it's like, I just have to download everything and check it out. So but you know, in board games, it's a little harder. You have to go buy them. They cost $40.
Or find somebody that has them and just mooch off and play them. That's just what I do.
Yeah. And I also like playing games with, you know, when people love them, right? Like, when somebody's like, hey, let's play this game, that usually is going to be a good experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's why we all do it anyway, to be honest with you, isn't it? It's just kind of that interaction. If you do get together with a group, it's amazing how some games, they're really good, but sometimes it matters the crowd that's there. You know, playing that can kind of sometimes that's an interesting thing. You just point that out, that sometimes I don't even think about that. Sometimes I played like this game, I love it, but then I played it with this group and they just weren't as enthusiastic about it. And, you know, it's just the way it is. And then you play it with somebody else and it's like completely different experience. It's basically the same game, but it's really the people that kind of make it, isn't it?
Yeah, and some people are have more fun with take that mechanics, and some people, you know, more cooperative or competitive.
Absolutely.
And they play games differently, and as you sort of, and you know, some games are different with 2 players to 4 players, right? So I think there's a big range of experiences you can have. But I mean, I'm the kind of guy, interesting, like, you know, there's the expression, like, people, like, the lowest part of your life is going and getting, like, drunk in a bar by yourself. Mm-hmm. For me, like, playing a board game by myself, or, like going to a movie by myself, that's, like, the, like, I just can't, I feel like it's just terrible. And I know there are people out there who like that, but for me, it's, like, I want to go enjoy entertainment with people. I like to share it, remember it together. I'm not so much... You know, as a kid, when I didn't have any friends, maybe I just spent too much time playing video games by myself in the dark, and I was like, I'm never doing this anymore. Right. But I like games you can play and engage with others.
Right, right. So I've noticed that Liftoff has some fantastically whimsical art style, and I love the prototype that I've seen. What was your build process and the art process like for that?
That's a great question. I'll sort of answer it in 2 parts. For me, whenever I'm working on sort of an independent game, whether it's a video game or board game, I learned very early when I started in college that rather than sort of being the guy in charge of the game and saying, I want this art, I want it to look like this, I find if you're working with an artist, if you look at their work and you just say, wow, your work's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Can we just make this game look like this works and the style you love? Mm-hmm. They enjoy it more. They're engaged more. They work faster. So in terms of the look and feel of the game, I knew Nicole. I knew her work. I mean, if you look at her portfolio, I think it's like NicoleKelly.com. If you just look at her stuff, it's like, oh, all of her stuff is fantastic and cute and has like a nice textured, interesting feel to it. So really that just came from her being inspired in the game and then doing her own style on it. In terms of the process, I started on a single piece of paper. You know, I'm a big pencil guy. I grew up a little. I didn't quite, you know, I wasn't born in the 90s, so I still use pencils. But I, you know, I just drew it on. I thought about it, and I at the time it was still an island, and I drew the island, and I talked about the 4 ways to get off. You know, like a radio, a smoke signal, a boat, making a boat, and swimming. And then, you know, I started thinking about how, you know, what the mechanic would be to gathering resources and moving to the locations and the spatial things around it. So that's just sort of how I developed it. And for what it's worth, all of those things are still there. The satellite's in there. I actually left smoke signal because I thought it'd be hilarious. The boat became... a rocket ship, and the swimming became a jetpack. So it was a really sort of faithful transition there. And then I had that piece, and I'll take for a game like a board game, I'll take components from other games and be like, okay, well, these cards mean that. These are the, you know, I just put the pieces on the table and I mess with it. I'll usually play as quickly as possible. This is true, you know, fail fast and quickly, iterate as fast as you can, play at every stage, right? That's true for video game development. That's true for game development from my experience. So was playing a lot on paper and then building out the board. And then when, as I got inspired and was driven to like, okay, I'm really going to try to make a board game out of this. Then sort of separately, I was with Nicole and saying, okay, hey, how can we have fun with this? You know, if you look at my portfolio of just games I've made in general, what video game more games, I like, you know, attractive, poppy, visual things. Like, I don't believe that there's art that's like kiddie art. Like, I think that fun graphic, I mean, I love animated films and anime and cartoons. And, you know, I think there's nothing wrong with any of that, right? So for me, I wanted to bring some of that life and vibrance from video games into board games. Because I think a lot of times board games just are very illustrated fantasy. You know, and I think you can have fun, and I'm not scared of something being cute. I mean, I think a lot of people see, and you know, it comes up when people talk about the game and they're like, oh, it says 8+ and it's cute. Aren't you afraid people are going to think it's a kid's game? And it's like, maybe, but like, then there are all those people who are just going to be able to smile when they pick up the little guy in their hands and take him off the planet, right? So that's sort of how I got around to it.
All right. So you mentioned earlier, and kind of just grazed by it, you currently have another game out there that can be added on to your Kickstarter called Murder of Crows. Can you tell us just a little bit about it?
Oh, yeah, sure. So Murder of Crows is a game that I co-designed with Thomas Denmark. I mean, Thomas Denmark, you know, was another guy who I met in the game industry, but he actually had made a card game called Dungeoneer, which is pretty fabulous game with, like, expansions. I mean, it's been around for a long time and has done well by Atlas. And he had been working on a game. He sort of wanted to make an Uno game, and he had this idea of spelling the word murder and trading cards. And so, you know, he sort of invited me in to work with him, and, you know, I sort of took two approaches to it that brought it to life. So, Murder of Crows is 2 to 5 players. It's 15-minute icebreaker game. Mm-hmm. You're spelling the word murder in front of you, so you have cards in your hand, and as you play them, you're sort of spelling it out. Mm-hmm. And there's a mood and a setting and you know, a victim and a killer. And when you spell it all out, you win. And then along the bottom, it actually reads out this sort of programmatically, if you will, this generated story that's unique to the cards you played. And we're using adjectives, nouns, and verbs to actually write it, you know, read it out. And so when we were talking about it, I don't know, that was like something I always thought would be cool, if you could like make a game where you tell a story and actually automatically works. And so I sort of engaged with him on that, and then also just sort of infusing it with more of that narrative. He was sort of, and I mean, again, he's fantastic. He had started at this place where it was much more on the Uno side, where there was less narrative within the cards and sort of story, and we sort of shifted it over, in which case then he found out that he had to do all the arts for every card had unique art. He just wanted one to be an M, one to be a U. And by the time we were done, it's this beautiful game where every card is unique, you know, hand drawn art by Thomas. And so it ended up taking us 6 years to bring to market. But because we all have day jobs. But really, it was, you know, again, I think it's dark, but in a fun, light way. And, you know, I think it's just a great game where you can pick it up, really simple instructions. Each card does one thing. It's got a little bit of take that, and I think people enjoy it. So hopefully people, you know, one of the things I've found out through really like engaging in crowdsourcing and Kickstarter and like really trying to like dive into like sort of board games at the grassroots level is there are tons and tons and tons of games out there that no one's ever heard of or played. Like everyone has a room and you go there and you know like 5 games, and then they've got 40 games that you've just been like, where did you buy these games? And they're in boxes and they're shiny and they're pretty. So, you know, I mean, I think it's also a nice opportunity that people who maybe have never heard of it will see it. It also helps me sort of help create some tiers so that I can actually fund Liftoff as well. But I think people enjoy it.
All right. So kind of speaking of that, you just brought it up. Other than obviously backing the game themselves, which we hope all of our listeners will take a look and consider doing, how can our listeners help you get Liftoff funded?
Well, so I mean, obviously, right, the funding, it is one. The second one, you know, is just being sort of aware of the major moments in the campaign and you know, retweeting or making a comment about it or passing it along, you know, especially somebody who's a backer, they want to see it funded. Mm-hmm. They like the idea. They want their copy. They, you know, if each person finds 10 other people and each one of them, you know, it's that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that, you know, those I think are the obvious ones. I think the ones that aren't as obvious are, you know, I've been trying to really, you know, this Kickstarter thing's new for me. The crowdsourcing thing's new for me. I've been really trying to embrace this idea of pay it forward and be helpful to anybody and everyone. And then as opportunities come up, they can do the same. So what I've tried to do is be totally transparent with what I've been doing. I've been very open with passing around my preview link. And, you know, I created this sort of Liftoff SWAT team of just random people I've met who seem like they're interested to know what's going on. Like I made a little calendar and I sent it to them. And so to answer that question specifically, if anyone has any ideas, like, oh, have you seen this? You know, I heard about this podcast from somebody else telling me about it, right? So I think if anyone has any ideas or suggestions, recommendations, people to talk to, I've found that that's amazingly, you know, like on Twitter, you're in this gigantic room with every single person who, and you can just have start having a conversation with any of them. So somebody introduces you to somebody, it's not some email chain or some meeting. It's like, no, you just have a conversation right there. And so more than just help fund, help spread the word, it's help engage and set, you know, come up with ideas and ways to, you know, spread the word. Or not spread the word, but like new things that's not just posting a you know, a Kickstarter link on your Twitter every 3 hours, right? Things that really create new opportunities for value.
Yeah, so basically really talking about it, which I tend to think that's the way that kind of works anyway. So if you get some people, you know, blowing that stuff up and discussing it and stuff like that, because I know that's what happens with us, you know, and then they say something and then it you know, it can it goes there, but then it also goes in physical contact with people too. I mean, that's, I know I do a lot of that kind of thing. So
awesome. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So you knew this was coming. We always ask our interviewers this question. So what is the like perfect beer that would go with Liftoff?
That is a good question. So what is a perfect beer? It would be a light beer, right? Like, you know, everyone has their tastes, and I think beer is such a wonderful thing that people I grew up in a family where my father brought his beer to the parties we went to. He didn't worry about what beer they had. He'd bring his Chimay with him. But again, something light, like a, you know, something on the order of a, like a Stella. Or if you're in the mood, it's a Planet, but it was based off of an island, so maybe like Corona, but like something that's an easygoing opener. I think if it's heavy and, you know, this isn't a Guinness game. This isn't a game where you're just going to like sit and okay, it's something that you should just enjoy and have fun and engage on the narrative. So those would be my two recommendations, but certainly whatever anyone wants, I'm not going to stop you.
Great.
All right. So, one of the things we always make sure to ask, how can our listeners get a hold of you?
So I've been super engaged on Twitter. And so it's at ebarra, first initial, last name. And if you send me a message, you'll connect with me. Also, in terms of Liftoff, if you just go to facebook.com/liftoffgame, you know, like it. That's where I'm doing all my, you know, major updates and information. And also, you know, it might say Liftoff is responding, you know, it might be the little alien responding to you, but the only person who talks for the alien is me. So like, if you make a comment and the alien responds to you, it's me.
Okay.
So those are the two best places, I think, to, you know, get in touch. And if you just want to learn more about me, you can go to my personal site, which is just Barif.com.
Barif.com. Okay, cool. Because what we'll definitely do is we'll throw those up on our show notes so people can quick link right to that stuff and don't have to be.
Yeah, and as soon as the Kickstarter link is official, you know, you guys will be the first to have it. And and please, you know, what's interesting, what's sort of important about Kickstarters these days is sort of having a really strong initial day or first day or two to get that momentum. It sort of pushes you up into different categories of blogs and attention. And so, you know, getting a big swell at the start is part of being successful.
Right. So is there, so Eduardo, really, had some really great things to talk about here. So is there anything else that you might want to share or?
Well, you know, I mean, again, I'm super appreciative to anyone who does, engage and back and really, I happen to, for lots of weird reasons, have lots of fantastic IP and game stuff that I'd love to bring to market. And so, you know, I'm hoping that this can, you know, start a trend and, you know, become a game guy that you guys, you know, look to enjoy the products of.
Awesome. Anything else you want to add to this too, Morgan? Anything else we might have missed asking?
I'm trying to think if I can remember anything, and I think I'm doing pretty good to remember my own name right now. So,
yeah.
I think we covered quite a bit.
yeah, we did. I don't think she's been drinking any beer, so I'm not going to attribute it to that.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
It would have been a much more exciting conversation.
Yeah, exactly. So, Eduardo, so your game is going to be hitting the Kickstarter here, and we'd really like to remind our listeners that we want to get behind this. It looks really like an awesome game, and we'd like to do anything we can to kind of get that ball rolling so we can get this thing into our hands. And I really appreciate you taking your time out to speak with us this evening.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Okay, welcome back. So, you know, we've kind of heard that we released that as a as another episode. We'll give them a little double plug here and so on. But why don't we get into some beer, Morgan? What do you say?
Sounds awesome.
Okay. So, welcome to the beer and game segment. So we take a look here at what beer goes with a select game, and we also wind up selecting, you know, a beer of the episode. And this time we're going to do something a little different because I thought it was a little, very appropriate. We are actually going to emphasize, or whatever you want to say, we're going to go with a brewery this time as a whole and look at some of the beers that they have. So we are going to, because that's going to make some sense here when we get into our In the Vault segment, we are going to go with the Caveman Brewery, which is located in the UK, which is kind of a bummer, you know, but I thought this was a very, very, very appropriate. So what I thought we'd do is, you know, kind of go through and, you know, look at some of the stuff that, that these guys have. And we're actually going to maybe, well, what we will do is we will highlight every one of the beers that they have. So I'm going to start with this first one. So the first one, I love the names of these beers are great.
Mm-hmm.
You just got to admit. It's the Prehistoric Amber. It's an atypical pale ale. This beer is made using amber malt, which gives a warm roast flavor, which is followed by a subtle orange and pink grapefruit from the hops. And then what's the next one they got there?
That is the Megalithic. Says it's definitely not a subtle beer. It's big on malt, big on hops. It's a big biscuity malt body that's balanced against a heavy hit of fruit from a blend of U.S. hops and a fairly dry finish.
Okay, sweet. And then we have our Cave Dweller, which is a big, rich porter with a full body and balanced bitterness from U.K. Brambling Cross hops. Chocolate and coffee notes come through in the malt and dark berry flavors from the hops. Okay, that sounds pretty good. And then what do we got next?
Then they have a Citra, a hoppy pale ale with a straightforward malt character that lets the citrus flavors from U.S. Citra hop shine through. A refreshing session beer for summer days.
Okay, and then the next one we've got is they've got is a Clovis Point Brown. I love all the themed beers. This is great. Particular favorite, they say, of the brewery. This U.S. style brown ale. Balanced caramel and roast malt flavors against juicy hops provide a complex yet well-balanced beer, unusual yet very drinkable. And then
we've also got the Paleolithic, which is a light session beer with their usual dose of aromatic hops. Well-balanced and highly drinkable, the beer is the Swanscombe Man's favorite brew, which is why they named it after the Paleolithic era. Sweet malts balance out the grapefruit and citrus from the U.S. Amarillo and Cascade hops to give it an easy drinking session pale ale.
Mm. Sounds good, too. And then the last one they got here is the Neanderthal, or Neanderthal, depending on how you want to pronounce it. The Neanderthal remembers when best bitter was the best. This beer is our recollection of that, full of roast and caramel malt flavors and a traditional Kent hops, best bitter. God, that is really hard to say. Too many B's in there for me. So, yeah, so that's what we're highlighting, and it actually fits really well with our thing. So, you know, we're going to have to I think we're going to have to talk to Dracass about this. Mm-hmm. She's in the UK and try to see where the heck this is. It looks like it's in Kent. Okay, let's see how far that London Road, it looks like where it's in. See if she's heard of this thing. Well, we're going to have her mail some of it to us or something. We're going to have to talk to her about that from the Epic Geeks podcast and see what if she's heard of this place, because I think that's pretty cool. We see if we can find one of those here. Anyway, so we'll probably move on to our game. So I don't know what kind of mood you're in here, Morgan, but I'm sure I'm going to get annihilated like I always do. But I might cheat a little bit here.
Alrighty.
So we'll go ahead and pick a couple of games here. I've got a couple I'm going to throw at you already, so I've got them already down. I don't know how I'm going to do on the beer part, but, you know.
We'll see, won't we?
Yes, exactly. So, do you want me to go first?
Oh, by all means, have the first shot.
Okay. So let's see. I'm going to go with some of the stuff I talked about at the beginning of the game, or at the beginning of the podcast, beginning of the game. Well, I guess this is kind of.
And so.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with that Yes Fan or whatever it is. Safan. So the camel game. So it has to do something with
the camel game.
Yeah.
The camel game.
Yeah. The socks and the, you know, desert
so
and sand and desert palm trees and all that kind of fun stuff. See, I'm stumping her.
Well, you say sand, so I say King Cobra.
There you go. That'll work.
See?
Nicely done.
See?
Nicely done.
Uh-huh. Alrighty. With the caveat that I'm going to tell you that you are cheating if you use any of the beers we just talked about.
Right.
Stone Age.
Stone Age. Oh. Oh, that's not going to be hard. Stone Age. I'll go with that Clovis Point Brown then, I guess. Because that's... Yeah, she's being nice to me today. I don't know why, you guys, but that was my gimme, I think, for forever there. Okay, so I got to give you another one here. So I'm gonna go with that Hoyuk, that Neolithic, you know, modular board placement game that I talked about at the beginning, the city building prehistoric one.
Prehistoric city building, and that was a lot of disasters, was it not?
Yes, yeah. There's a catastrophe that always happens in it. Yeah. And there was ovens and corrals and shrines and all that other fun stuff. By the way, I mean, if I do want to help you a little bit, Hoyuk is Turkish for hill or mound. And it's also used for the...
See.
Yeah, and it was also used as a prehistoric settlement in the region. That had that characteristics, which were like those hill-like look to the houses and stuff that they were built on top of older houses in the absence of streets and so on. And that people came in through the roof into the house.
As you do. Well, we're gonna have to go with a Rolling Rock here.
Yeah, that's a good
one. Yeah, see?
See, I can't get her, you guys. She's just too good.
I'm on this.
Yeah, she's awesome at this stuff. Okay, so it's your turn.
Let's see here. Oh, what do I want to go with here? Okay.
All right.
What beer goes with Coup?
Oh, man. Something to... Well, I don't know.
Uh-huh. Is that the sound of being stumped?
Yeah, it could be. And just, I don't know. It's just... I'm trying to think what the heck you want to... I'm trying to think if there's, like, something that's... I don't think I can use anything of those prehistoric ones. Aren't going to work.
No, somehow I don't think so.
Yeah. Oh, I'm really going to stretch here. Use one of our... They got a brewery here, and I don't know how I'm making this connection, but this is the first thing that popped in my head. Is I was going to use Wild Horse Ale. It's a beer that's here. I'm like, well, how the heck does that go with Coup? But I guess in that game you could kind of run wild or something. I don't know. I'm really stretching. It's a bad stretch, but...
Yeah, you may have needed to like warm up before the stretch.
There. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how I'm making that fit, but that's what I'm going to go with because that's what popped into my head. Okay, and I think my last one I'm going to throw at you. See, it seems like we're cheating a little bit today. We're not, though. But pulling games from what we talked about today, I'm going to go with Kingdom Builder.
Ooh, Kingdom Builder. Okay. We're not going to go with that one, even though that's really what I usually complain to people. Oh, well, obviously... Kingdom Builder, Kingdoms to Empires. We need an Imperial Stout.
There you go. Man, see how awesome she is at this. Okay, one more.
One more shot here?
Yeah, just make me bleed on the floor here. Let's go. Lost
it. All right.
It is, but...
Well, you know what? I want to know what beer goes with Valley of the Kings.
Valley of the Kings. Oh, you know what? I kind of had something ready to go. I was thinking she was going to do something else here, and she just threw something else at me that... Valley of the Kings. I'm going to go with this beer called Wizard Sleeve. I don't know.
Okay.
It's wizards and kings or something. I don't know. See, I'm really stretching. That one's not as bad of a stretch, I don't think. You know. Oh, I don't know. Or maybe tastes like something's burning. That might be another one to go with, too.
That could just be a theme beer for you playing games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe I'd just use that one every time. That would be my...
Yeah, for Pompeii, right?
Yeah, or anything. I could use it for anything. Yeah, it's actually perfect. Yeah, that is true. That works perfect. So, anyway. Okay, folks, I think we'll wrap that up, and we will head off into our last segment, which is Back in the Vault. So, do you know what? I don't feel too bad today, so I think I'm going to get a hold of this chain. If you want to watch Morgan, you can certainly watch
it. I'll totally just supervise.
Yeah, just supervise, and I'm going to get a hold of this chain here and get this door open so we can get in here, and I'll pull, and I will pull. See how easy it is. I oiled it up really good today. And we'll get in here and talk about Back in the Vault. So this is our discussion and look back at old games that may be still around, and those are out of print, and we just tend to focus on the out-of-print games. So the game we're going to pick, which goes with our brewery very well on this episode, is we're going to take a look back at the game Sticks and Stones by Metagaming, which is one of these little micro games. So I actually have two copies of this game, believe
it. Oh, really?
Yep. I've got, unfortunately, one of them, I just have the rule book and the map, and the other one, I have all the pieces. So I actually had to make – so actually what I did is my other one's in really good shape. I don't really play with that one. And then this is the one that I play with. So it's my play copy. I just reprinted and made my own counters. So it's a, you know, we have a map with counters on it and your hexagonal pieces and whatever. So why don't we talk a little bit about what this kind of game is about, so you can see why it'll fit with our beer of the episode for sure. So this is a game about warfare in the late Stone Age. And so each player arms his warriors as he sees fit with stone axes, spears, bows, or just bare hands. So you get points and you buy them, and they've got scenarios and stuff in there, and then you can do different objectives and you fight with them. What else is in there?
Oh, we've got trained dogs, dependents, herds of domesticated animals, goods, and village raids, ritualized battles, migrations, and the beginning of true warfare between more powerful villages.
Right. So I kind of answered the question that those are some of the goals or scenarios or whatever in the game. So there's also a special, which I thought this was always fun, a special solitary scenario that allows a single player to command a group of hunters attempting to kill a mammoth. So it's kind of a mammoth hunt. He randomly moves around the map, and you buy all the guys, and you try to kill a mammoth. He's really tough, but that's a solo game, and it's kind of fun. And then go ahead.
So there's optional. So we've also got optional rules for the use of fire and poisoned weapons as well.
Okay, cool. So I'm sure you've never seen this before, but one of the things I think I can mention with this is that it gets me to think that, whether you really see the connection or not, that this seems to be these little metagaming that came out. And there was a bunch of them. They were all themed about different things. You know, Ogre, the tank game, was in this group. Mm-hmm. Wizard, which we've talked about on a previous podcast. We've done a couple of these. We're kind of the precursor to these real quick setup, quick play games. Now, mind you, these do take a little bit more, but compared to some of the stuff that was coming out around this time period, these things were super fast, you know, in comparison. So they're like little tiny maps. It's a little pocket-sized rule book, set of counters, and a little map. Basically, all these little games came with. So it's really easy to set it up. The rules aren't too bad. I don't think you know, it takes a little bit to get through. I think it's like a 22-page rule book. But I know one of the we'll talk about some of the reviewers. Somebody mentioned the font's kind of small. You know, it could maybe be rethemed a little bit or whatever, but I always thought it was a really cool, fun little game, and I always got a kick out of it. I always liked the theme, and you really don't see a lot of these Neolithic or caveman-style games, although there's one of them I'm thinking of. I'm going to get off on a little tangent, and I can't remember the name of it. Something like Mammoth Hunters or something like that. There's one it's down at one of our game stores. It's on the shelf, and you can play it, and I keep meaning to pick it up and look at it. I'll find out what the name of it is, and hopefully on the next podcast I'll remember and mention it again. But that's the only other one I really think that's kind of themed around this. I mean, do you know a lot of games that are kind of themed around, you know, caveman stuff?
I mean, other than the obvious Stone Age.
Right.
And Ugtect.
Okay.
Have you ever played Ugtect?
No, I haven't done that one.
It's a goofy little one. There's inflatable, like, stone and wood mallets, and yeah.
Oh, cool.
I feel like there's one more that's just like floating off right in the ether here, and I don't remember what it is right now, but
right.
Yeah, those are really the only ones that I'm really.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. This is kind of one of my little favorite metagaming just cause I thought it was kind of cool. It was a little different. You know, I thought it was kind of had a little unique flavor to it and stuff,
mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff. And then some of the units in the game were kind of funny. We'll kind of talk about that. Some of the reviews or whatever. So, why don't we look at what some people said about the game kind of hear my take on it. Like I said, maybe next to Wizard, probably my next favorite of the little metagames that came out that I was collecting. So so it's as this one reviewer says, it's great fun. It's a simple beer and pretzels game. See, we got the beer in
there. Yay!
And you got to have beer from the Caveman Brewery if you want to do that. And pretzels game, good for a lunch break playing. Probably could with this one, actually. Always buy a bow in case the other guy brings dogs. I still have it many years later, and I have a copy of it as well. Like I said, I have two of them. So what else are they saying?
Earns points is the only Hex Encounter Neolithic war game there is. I'm a big fan of the subject matter. Advanced solitaire rules with like Irish Elk, Smilodon, Rhinos, Wolf Packs, Terror Birds. And another expansion, Shamans, Chieftains, Campaigns, Conquistadors, Copper Tech, available in Space Gamer magazine. Do you have the expansion?
No, I don't, because after I was looking at some of the stuff with this, I have to go look at that stuff because that looks really cool. I've never seen any of that stuff, but that would kind of kick the game up a little bit, you know. And it, like I said, I'm going to kind of – one of the reviewers in here, and I didn't put all the stuff in here looking at, but just kind of going through some of his thing, was the rule book was kind of small, and I agree. And if you made the map a little bigger and the pieces a little bigger, and so you could flip them over because the units get wounded and stuff like that. I mean, you could do some pretty simple things to really improve and make this really cool. I don't know if that's something you could do. I know it's out of print, but I wonder if anybody has any copyright stuff on this, because I don't even know if metagaming's still, you know, still around. But this would be really cool. Somebody rethemed this thing and redid it, you know, with some of the things we have now, and maybe beef up some of the mechanics would be pretty cool. So it's an open-ended game design, allows for easy imaginative additions and scenario creation. That's what I liked about this one in particular. From these early on games, it had a lot of that imaginative, you could stick stuff in really easy, which I thought was cool, and you didn't really see that with a lot of that kind of stuff. So, and then what do we got there for the last one?
We've got one of my favorite micro games. Just love the theme and it plays well. How can you pass up a game that has counters representing goats?
Yes, there are goats in the game. And so, you know, they can be different victory conditions. You can gather them up. I think there's one of the scenarios in there. You go over to the other guy's village and try to raid his, take his goats from him and bring them back to yours. And then he does the same thing and tries to stop you and so on. I mean, it's all kinds of goofy little things you could do. And they had like a village raid and all these cool little things. But the counters were really cool. The artwork on the counters for the units, I mean, if you've looked at them, they were really cool. They did a really, really good job, I think, on the counter set here. You know, if you look at some of the, you know, if you can find places that have pictures, if you go to Board Game Geek, they've got, you know, pictures of some of the images and stuff like that. And you can kind of see the counter sheet there, you know, and I think if you go to it and you, if you can kind of go to the, maybe the original size one and you blow it up a little bit, you can kind of get a thing, but they did a really good job in the artwork. That's what I'm saying. The pieces are kind of small. It'd be really cool if they were blown up a little bigger because they're very detailed. I mean, the little guys with the bows, and I really like the way the hand guys looked, because the armored hand guys, was just look at these big Neanderthal guy with like a big rock or something over his head. And then the guy that had armor, he's got like these furs on him, you know, so those easy ways to distinguish, you know, which units had the armor on them and which ones didn't. So, and just kind of looking at that, I know that that game is, God, what is that going for? I was actually looking at some of the prices in the marketplace. I haven't really looked on eBay, but anywhere from $15 to $50.
Oh, wow. That's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, that's well, I wouldn't be surprised if some of this stuff is, I mean, if you go onto eBay and you take a look at it, obviously it's out of print, you're gonna have to find it that way. But it's not, you know, not bad, but if you want something kind of different that's themed a little bit differently and you want to play some old school stuff, once again, we wouldn't put it on the show if we don't recommend it, I guess. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
Unless explicitly stated.
Yes, unless explicitly stated. That's right. So anything else you want to add about that, Morgan?
I think I'm good.
Okay. Stone Age. Anyway, so let's go ahead and start wrapping up the show. What do you say?
Excellent.
Okay, so thanks for joining us and stay tuned for our next show, which should be pretty regular now, folks. Now that I think some of us are, at least me, I'm done with all my travels. For more game talk, beer, and interviews. So, Morgan, where can people get a hold of us?
Okay, you can find us at boardgamesandbeerpodcast@gmail.com.
And we are also on Twitter at BGB podcast_game.
And on our website, bgbpodcast.com.
And our show notes, links, and email, Twitter, and all that stuff we just mentioned can also be found there. We can also be found on iTunes and also on Stitcher. And then where can people find you, Morgan?
If you're looking for me individually, I am at Give a Geek a Game on Twitter. My website is ifyougiveageekagame.com, and my email is the same, ifyougiveageekagame@gmail.com.
Awesome. Okay, so any other real quick shout-outs before we roll on out of here?
I think we're all right.
You think you're all right? Like I said, I'm going to throw one more shout-out to Phil. Really sorry to see him go, but, you know, he's got to do what he's got to do. We're hoping maybe at some point he can pop back down here. We're going to miss him in the group. He's been really, really fun to play with. So all the best to him, and hopefully we can stay in touch with him. So anyway, until our next episode, we will talk to everybody later. See you later, Morgan.
Have a good night.